Hello and welcome to the first Hulkcast of a new season. I'm James Rushton. I'm joined by Daniel Raza. And we've got 6 points in the bag. We beat Hull and Wigan over the last week since our season preview. And it's been really positive for the most part, hasn't it, Daniel?
I think so. I think the main thing is we've got the points. So I don't want to fall into the trap of complaining too much. So 6 points. You know, we've got them. And I think the other thing to realize is that, well, it's the first time we have won back to back in the at the start of any season since the 1990s.
Yeah, 1999 to be exact, and I think it was 1962 the last time. It's in the 60s at least. The last time we won three games in a row to start the league. Yeah, that's incredible, mate. That is really, really good news. First order of business, I guess, is to speak about the first game of the season. We beat Hull by 3-1, mate. And it wasn't the best match at all, was it? But there were some key highlights for Villains. Of course, namely, Alan Hutton scoring, mate. And he looked like he enjoyed that last goal.
I enjoyed that last goal. It was really funny that we joke about Alan Hutton all throughout the summer. It was always, you know, it was good news to see him signing the contract, you know, considering the situation we were in, knowing that we were going to lose a lot of players. And obviously with the experience of John Terry and Robert Snodgrass going, we really did look in danger of losing all our sort of key leadership figures. And I think, you know, that really cemented Alan Hutton further into the team's sort of DNA. And I think it was great to see him score. And you know, it's something that he deserves after a great season last year, and it is only his second goal for the club, and it's his first in about, I think, 5 years.
Yeah, so let's go back to the start of that match, because we need to talk about it in order. Villa did go behind 10 minutes into the new season, ruined my prediction, as you pointed out. It was a goal from Evandro. It was like a hooked, almost like a, you know, when you're in a bunker in golf and you chip it out, the sandwich.
Yeah. You've
got to chip it up. He kind of chips it up from the edge of the box on a rebound and it just sinks in to the net. And I think that a lot of people blame Jed Steer for the punch out. But for me, I think Alfie could have maybe, if that was John Terry, I think the geezer takes that ball and it's nowhere near the net. He puts the body on the line. Which was unfortunate. And I think Villa lost out there. But Alfic, of course, come back into the game and equalised Villa from an unmarked header, brought us back straight in, 1-1. And from there, we kind of pushed on a little bit and grew into the game. Ahmed Al-Mohammadi, of all people, scored the first goal. Then Hutton, of course, looked like Maradona when he scored his 3-1.
Yeah.
And I think we could have played better. I think you'll agree there.
Yeah, 100%. We could have played better. We should have played better. I think, you know, it was Hull City, a team who are low in confidence. They're not a great side. Obviously, every team at the start of the season is going to have some sort of fire in them, which makes them perform better than usual. You would assume, or makes them at least try harder than usual. But of course, last season, Hull City looked just absolutely impotent. Essentially, they could score goals. I mean, especially away from home. They just really did struggle. And I think for them, it was key for them that they managed to keep a hold of Bowen. Is that his name? Jared Bowen? That's his name, isn't it?
Yeah, Jared Bowen, yeah, for a key player.
Yeah, key of them to keep a hold of him. So, you know, that always was going to be a plus for them going into that match. But again, it is something that, you know, after a long preseason, we've seen Villa play a lot in the preseason. You would have liked us to have made an easier job of it. But I think first game of the season, you can't complain. 3-1 at the end of the day was a good result at the end, even if the first 70 minutes were quite dull.
Yeah, so both our predictions are wrong, mine more so. Gone. I think I said 1-0 the night of Villa.
Mm.
And that was gone. All this compiled by executive producer Trevor Hood, who's made that little graph for us. And it hasn't gone well for me in terms of predictions, because I actually thought Jack Grealish will be leaving in the transfer window, which brings us onto our next point, of course, transfers.
Yep.
He didn't end up going anywhere, mate, did he?
No, he didn't, and I'm not surprised. We just didn't get a good enough bid in for him, so fair enough. You know, he's got 2 years left on his contract. So that, to me, unless the player is in the final year of his contract, I think that's the only time when I think you got to stray away from the rule. I think unless a player is in the final year of his contract, the ball really is in the selling team's court. I think Tottenham Hotspur know that we've got trouble with financial fair play. I don't know what the situation is with that at the moment, but they obviously didn't match our 25 million, and they obviously weren't willing to match anybody's price for any players throughout the window. I said to you in the podcast 2 weeks ago, James, that they weren't going to sign him because they haven't signed anybody and they're not signing anybody. Well, that's what ended up happening at the end. They signed nobody. They put in a lackluster bid for Grealish on the last 24 hours of the window, and yeah, inevitably it was rejected.
What makes me think, you know, you look at this Liverpool team that, as we're recording, is playing right now, and they pay big fees and they have to wait for players like Virgil van Dijk and Naby Keita. But they get those players, and that's because they're serious about getting those players. And if I was a Tottenham fan, it's not like I'd be worried. I think Daniel Levy, for the most part, has done an excellent job in restoring the fortunes of Tottenham Hotspur to the top tier of English football. You know, it wasn't so long ago that when we were in the Premier League, especially during the Martin O'Neill years, that they were kind of languishing, 10th, 11th, boring. And now they're dining at the top plate of European football. But they could be better. And I think that's what everyone's getting annoyed of. They're not pushing on like Liverpool are. They're not putting in serious bids for serious players. And if they try to, you know, their first bid for Grealish, mate, was ridiculous. 3 million quid in Onoma.
Was that what it was?
Having a laugh.
Was that definitely the first bid?
That's definite. That's ridiculous. That's offensive. That doesn't... I know Daniel Levy is a pretty good chairman for all intents and purposes, but to you know, you wouldn't bid 3 million for Naby Keita, would you? And I know that he's a world class player, and I know Jack Grealish isn't at that level yet. But you got to start as you mean to go on and put a serious bid in. First bid should be accepted.
Yeah, no, I mean that's fair. That's fair. I think it's one of those where I don't know what their intentions were, whether it was to make it look as though they were trying to sign players. Maybe they thought Villa were that desperate to get Jack Grealish out because, you know, maybe they thought he didn't want to be at the club. But I think the other thing is, you know, they loaned Josh Onoma out to us last season, and their thought process might have been, well, you know, maybe Villa really like Josh Onoma. Maybe, you know, they've seen a chance. They've had a chance to see him play. Maybe, you know, he'd be their perfect replacement for him. But
We do like Onoma, but not as much as, you know, not being entered into administration.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And we like, you know, we like Onoma, and you know, but the thing is, we like our boy a lot better, don't we? You know, we like
Jack Grealish even more. Having 25, 30 million in the bank so we can pay our bills.
This is it. You know, that's ridiculous. The swap deal. You know, would have absolutely no benefit for us. I don't know what's going to happen with financial fair play now that Grealish isn't sold. I personally think he'll be off in January. But, you know, I think we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, no, of course. We're going to have to certainly wait and see with that. We did have a question. Let me just check who it was from. It was regarding FFP, actually. It was from Michael Miller. That's MB Miller ROC on Twitter.
Okay.
And what happened to all the concern with FFP? And I think, mate, the way the league has handled FFP is ridiculous because Blues blew it, QPR blew it, and not one of them has had a serious punishment. Blues were allowed to sign 5 players after a transfer embargo. QPR were hit with a massive fine that was reduced and is averaged out over 10 years. There's no punishment for FFP. However, those punishments, you know,
their teams are up on it.
I think Villa would be in serious breach if they were to, you know, carry on the way they were. But things have changed, man. You got rid of John Terry. You ain't paying them massive loan fees for wages. You know, you're not paying Sam Johnson. You bought a cheaper keeper. You bought a cheap midfielder. And you've made some sales. And the QPR and Blues didn't do that. They carried on. Like, we've at least made some reductions. We have got a lower bill than last season. So I don't see how, when you look at us, if the EFL look at our case, they can go, oh, Villa have failed because now we've cut stuff. I think there's a case for Villa there to push on and go, wait, you can't deduct points off us because we've actually tried to reduce his losses. You can't give us a transfer embargo. You know, we don't care. But hey, make this rule better, make it clearer. I don't think it is.
Yeah, I wonder whether our owners are in some sort of contact or in some sort of conversation with FFP. To kind of, not to reduce the punishment, but almost to kind of like work with them and figure something out. But we've talked about it so much, and you know, I don't want to go down that line again, because to be honest, you know, when it comes to talking about Villa, we want to talk about what we know about, and nobody knows a thing about financial fair play because there's no set standard. There isn't a standard to it. There's no way we can assume what punishment any side is going to get. All we can do is have a look at the case studies. And unfortunately, James, there's not a lot of case studies.
Not all. No, it's almost like a black hole of just unknowing. Because QPR were punished and Birmingham City were punished. But I don't see why you'd go in on Villa for trying to, you know, for cutting their bill. It's odd.
Mm.
It's strange because Birmingham City is still playing players like Jota, you know, on massive wages, and they tried to sign John Terry on big wages. So it's a really strange situation all in all. But yeah, FFP, we don't know anything about it. And the way it's handled by the league, it's neither here or there. It's completely different each time. There's no benchmark. So exactly. No idea about it. I'm personally not going to be concerned about it because the guys in charge aren't.
No, well, yeah. I mean, we can only assume they're not. If they didn't sell Jack Grealish, that tells me that, yeah, they're not awfully concerned.
Yeah, so let's move on because we did have a few deals done. We'll speak more about John McGinn later, but that was a snip, getting him at under 4 million.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm going to snip, mate. Gary Gardner, of course, left to join Birmingham City on loan, which is a bit odd, I have to say.
Yeah, I know. Running the length of the pitch after scoring against them.
Yeah, victory lap. perfect sleeper agent.
I can't remember any Villa player that actually was actually that extra about scoring against Blues as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of Blues fans going, oh, we sung keep right on for his initiation. That means he's always been a blue nose. No, the game, it's clear for me, that, you know, the guy scored a sick header against them, ran the entire pitch to celebrate like Adebayo did. You know what I mean? That's Villa.
That is exactly it. He's absolutely mugged them off, and now they've taken him on loan, which is honestly just really, really funny.
It's not a bad deal, though, is it? Because he gets to play with his brother. He'll start every week, and he'll be playing at a decent championship level under Gary Monk. Ignore the fact it's Birmingham City. You know, you'd take that deal if it was set to you. It's just really funny.
No, obviously
the basics of it are just really funny.
We've all been taking the mic because it is funny, but. Right, you know, you look at the other options. It was what? Was it Bolton and who was the other option?
QPR, and I think
you'd
stay in Birmingham, wouldn't you?
You don't want to go to QPR because QPR are still...
QPR.
Yeah, the QPR, right? I don't know what they stand for as a club. You don't want to go to Bolton necessarily because you know you're going to be fighting a relegation battle. It might be a little bit... I don't know. Bolton's fine as well, actually. You know, I ain't got a problem with Bolton. But... You know, out of all of those sides, Birmingham, he doesn't have to relocate. He doesn't need to move away from home. As you say, he gets to play with his brother. It's just like logistically, it just makes the most sense, you know?
Yeah, and then you get to be this excellent sleeper agent, knowing that if Blues have a good season, that it's on the back of the shoulders of a Villa man. And that's quite funny.
Oh, that is another.
Like, if any success comes Blues' way, it's because, lightly, of a Villa boy in their midfield.
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's quite funny, that is. But I think the biggest talking point on the transfer window was a Joe Bryan deal. So Villa agreed a deal to sign Joe Bryan, a left-back, you know, a very good left-back from Bristol City. At the 11th hour, Fulham come in with a transfer offer. It was accepted. And during a medical on his way to sign his Villa contract, Bryan actually left and went to Fulham to do his medical. eventually signed for Fulham. It's hilarious. I am angry about it, but I think... Realistically, if a Premier League club like Fulham comes in for you, you know, Fulham play good football. They're a decent club. They got beat on the weekend, but I digress. But Joe Bryan, I'd find it hard to reject that. Personally, I don't think I could because I'd have felt committed to Villa at that point. I'd have felt a bit like I've been shown around. Everyone's really nice. They want me to be part of this. I don't think I'd have been able to do that.
Have you never been to a job interview where you seem ready, right? And then next thing you know, whilst you've already sort of agreed personal terms or whatever, next thing you know, you've got the contract waiting in front of you. You haven't signed it, but a better job offer comes along.
That's never happened to me, mate.
Has it not?
No, oh, right, okay. I've only get one job offer at a time, pal.
Oh, fair enough.
They are few and far between for me. But no, I completely understand if a contract comes in. It's what you got to do. I just feel... I'd be a bit too committed.
No, yeah, exactly.
It depends. It's football. You know what I mean. Villa and Fulham is not. There's the Premier League football. But to be honest, I'd have went.
Okay, look,
Villa.
There's a chance of getting promoted with us. It's not incredibly high. You know, I mean, we're a very good side.
It's higher now.
I mean, yeah, definitely. But you know, Fulham you know that you're coming in to replace Matt Targett. You know, he's not there anymore. They do need a left back. They need somebody filling in. If you can come into the Premier League and become a first choice left back there, you're fine. You're sorted. Do you know what I mean? And once you're playing in the Premier League, if Fulham go down, you've got much more of a chance of getting another move to the Premier League. And I think a player like him, you know, he's been playing in the Championship for a long time. You just want to get up there. It is where the elite play. And I think for any footballer who's playing in England, if that chance comes along, and I'd apply this to Jack Grealish as well. If that chance comes along, you know, 9 times out of 10, you're going to accept it. As long as you know you're going to play.
Absolutely, mate. The transfer window did close, though. It's permanent transfers, so Villa can still make free transfers, loan to boys and loan deals. And there are rumours about loan to boys that are really good in the no-account Villa transfers that kind of has an eye on the medicals. They do believe that a loan to boys coming in the next few days. And there's been a lot of suggestion. There's been a lot of suggestion. It's Robert Snodgrass, who is actually playing this minute. Yeah. For West Ham.
Well, yeah.
So no, it can happen. That's just, you know, because he's playing for West Ham doesn't mean it's not going to happen. But I think good addition.
Hopefully there's time for them to grab a consolation whilst Robbie's on the pitch. That'd be nice to see. But it'd be great. It'd be great to have Robert Snodgrass back. I think what that does mean is, again, it'll be unlucky for the likes of Andre Green, who need to be playing a little bit more. But we do need, I think, another guy out wide. The other rumour that I'd heard today, obviously it was reported by the Daily Mirror, is Martin Odegaard, who might actually be a better option than Robert Snodgrass purely because of his age. I don't know if that means that Madrid would allow us to have a buy option at the end of it, but that would be a very, very interesting one. Obviously the Norwegian wonder kid.
Because Odegaard is probably one of the most exciting players that I've never seen. And it doesn't seem like his career has gone like that great, but usually it's the people who kind of, they're highly rated as a young, you know, when they're younger, they have a few quiet years around 19 odd.
Yeah.
And then they come back into it. Like Wijnaldum.
Yeah, exactly.
Would be, you know, a good example of that coming on a bit later. If Villa can get a deal for someone like Odegaard sorted, that'd be pretty cool.
But, you know.
It'd be aiming high.
Yeah. I don't know if it'd be a loan to buy either.
Yeah, but I say aim to high. The bloke's only played for here in Vin, you know, a bit. So, you know, a season and a half before breaking his foot there. So he's still got a lot to prove. And I think Championship is a great way to prove it. You know, it's England's second tier. And a bit tougher in spots than the Holland's top league. I'm not going to even try and pronounce it. I struggle. Yeah, there you go. That's perfect, mate. Perfect. Don't worry. Your BBC trainer's coming in, kicking in right there, isn't it?
I scour Reddit soccer enough to consider myself a international expert of football.
A connoisseur.
Exactly.
A connoisseur. Can you
pronounce that one, James?
I've just done it. I've just did it.
It was all right, mate. It wasn't bad.
Connoisseur. It's a French word. I don't know why you're not doing it French. I don't know why you're not doing that. A connoisseur.
There's no year. No, nobody yeah, gets used apart from the British.
Year, isn't there, mate? Okay. But yeah, I'm British.
Yeah, I know, but like the French don't do you.
Connoisseur. 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 Okay, I'm done, mate.
Okay, that's all right. Well, you know, you tried, mate.
Shall we go on to Wigan? Yeah, because Villa tried to win and it took a while to do so. It took him to the last kick of the game to actually win the match. John McGinn comes in straight in, number 7, centre midfield, puts Conor Hourihan at the side, takes a free kick, and it finds James Chester, who puts Villa in front. Magic, mate. John McGinn, really happy with him. So happy that I've named this episode the John McGinn Fan Club. Mate, I didn't think we needed to push Conor Hourihan aside, but my God, there's something special going on there if that carries on. I think it's a shame because Hourihan's really good. But if he can't get into the team over McGinn, Villa don't exactly lose out.
No, and you're supposed to have multiple midfield options. That's just the way it works in the Championship. It's a very long and hard season where there's going to be days when we're going to need McGinn to perform. There's going to be days where we're going to need Conor Hourihan to perform. There's going to be days where one of them just isn't doing it for whatever reason. Now, near the end of the game, of course, we were already, I mean, it was 2-2, and that spark from Conor Hourihan, as well as John, as is it John? as long as As well as John McGinn did all game, finding things with that, that perfect left foot of his, he didn't find that final delivery, did he? It was Conor Hourihan who did it. And I think we need those fresh ideas. We need those multiple personalities coming out, coming together with that creativity. And personally, the way that I see it is that when you have options on the bench and when you have substitutes, when you have backups, they're not supposed to be players who can just fill in and do a job. They're supposed to be players who can fill in and do as well a job, or on their day, do a better job. And I think that's what we need to be aiming for here. That's what Henry Lansbury needs to aspire to be. And I think there's going to be days where Hourihan plays. There's going to be days where McGinn plays. But either way, we've got some very, very talented midfielders in our team now.
I think that transfer window ended probably as well as it could for Villa without Joe Bryan. But I'm really impressed with McGinn. And the way he runs is incredible. It's like, he says it's like chasing a helicopter. It's all elbows and arse kind of out. I'd compare it to in the cartoon when there's like a happy dog.
Yeah.
And his tongue's out. Yeah. And he's going every, limbs are going every, it's like that. He's out. He runs with his elbows out, tongue out, head first. And it's really good to see someone take control of the ball, not just up front, but in midfield and
he's
in defence.
Smiley face. He puts in
I love him. I really do. I've never felt so connected to a Villa player seconds into their career. Seconds.
And I think it's helped that Hibs fans have been so nice about it. You know, there's no animosity towards him, which just kind of like shows that he's a well liked player. He probably puts the effort in. And I think that's all important.
Is it a very English attitude that we'd have been pissed off with 25 million for Grealish when McGinn went for under 3 million?
Well, yeah, but this is the thing. Why aren't you know? These are the sort of targets. These are the sort of fees we need to be looking to pay.
Why aren't clubs going for people like McGinn? That's crazy. That is crazy that John McGinn fell to us. There was no one except Celtic.
Yeah. Well, exactly. You know, and there are players like that in the Scottish Premier in the Scottish Premiership. You know, you know, you look at what was it Josh Windass that ended up at Wigan Athletic? Another one who was doing well at Rangers, and they ended up going there. I don't think they paid an awful lot for him.
Former villain Harry Forrester was doing all right at Rangers before a few attitude issues kicked in, I guess. Mm. Now he's playing in the Iran Premier League for a fair whack of money.
Does he play for?
I could not name it.
If you
not off my heart. Harry Forrester, former villain. Probably would have been a good signing, but I think his attitude's been a bit of a problem for him, especially at Rangers. He had a really good season, but he left and he's actually went to Iranian side Traktor Sarzi.
Yeah, and the important name in there, Traktor Sarzi Tabriz. So obviously Tabriz is a very big city in Iran. In fact, it's actually Tabriz is technically in the East Azerbaijan province, but the stadium that he plays at as well. This is the funny thing I find about Iran, right? And the stadiums in the Iranian league, they're huge, man. Like they're massive. Like the stadium that Traktor Sarzi play at is 66,000. I don't know if that gets filled, but
it's still a spectacle if it gets full, even if it had half.
Well, this is it, you know, 66,000. People come in to watch Harry Forrester banging him in.
There we go.
Yeah, fair play. That's what happens when you accidentally get a unknown agent.
That's a nice tangent to go off of John McGinn though, because it's like the story of in the Scottish Premier League. There's probably gold to be found. You know, could this be in other leagues? You know, is this the case in other leagues where we're just not looking at good players because the standard of the league? And it's not even a terrible standard, really, is it? It's not horrific. But you're looking past people like John McGinn. You're looking past other people, maybe in other leagues. Who knows?
Well, the trend's been Portugal, hasn't it?
Yeah, especially of late. But Villa's game against Wigan, it didn't go well after that goal because Wigan scored two in their first one, mate. Milo Jedinak back passes the ball. New goalkeeper Oya Nyland can't get off his line quick enough because the back pass, it's going to Nick Powell already.
Hmm. Yeah.
And a lot of people blame Nyland for not coming off his line.
Not Nyland's fault.
But I've got to say, that ball he didn't look. He passed it. It was going about 1 mile an hour, that pass, into the path of Nick Powell.
Why should Nyland have come off his line? You know, Jedinak has plenty of time. Loads of time. Centre-back's supposed to have control there. And you as a keeper, you've got to trust your centre-back. You can't be, you know, worried about what he's doing all the time. And, you know, I think that is 100% Mile Jedinak's fault. Maybe I'd say 90% Mile Jedinak's fault.
Yeah, there could have been help, but he did that before. He did it earlier in the match, mate. He did that exact pass earlier in the match, and Norland was in trouble. So once you see that, don't do it again. Do not do it again.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? He's a defensive midfielder, right? He does that pass all the time in his position. Why? Because the centre-backs are closer by, right? And the centre-backs come forward with it. That's their role. He doesn't know a thing about passing back to the goalkeeper. That's not what he's been doing his whole career. That's not what he's been coached on, is it? You know, let the guy do what he needs to do, especially as Villa. To be fair, now we're playing it along the ground a lot more. We do like passing the ball about just a little bit. You know, he's got to be more comfortable there. But if he's not, just understand that the guy is not a centre-back. And we've been saying it for ages. Like, I cannot name you, James. I cannot name you. And he's probably played there a number of times now. I cannot name you a single game where I thought Jedinak has had an acceptable performance at centre-back.
Yeah, the only way he's going to learn is with minutes, but do you want to give him the minutes?
No, he's 35 or whatever it is. It's like, let him play his position.
Yeah, it's a big ask, and especially when you got Tommy Alfick again, picture of professionalism. He had a really mixed game against Hull. But if I'm him and I'm getting put on the bench, I'm like, you don't want Millie there in a back two. You want him in a back three where he can be supported, not when he's going to play hospital balls back to the goalkeeper.
Yeah, totally.
And I've struggled to see how Alfie can take that. I really do. Maybe you play Axel Twanzaby next match as centre back. Maybe you do that. But I struggle with Alfie. I really do, because I think, how could you? I'd be banging on Steve Bruce's door after that, going, mate,
what? Yeah, loan me out again.
Yeah, straight up. No, straight up, because we're not playing the centre-back in a position. We're not playing Axel Twanzaby in the centre-back position. We're actually trying to force Mile Jedinak in. And the guy's not going to learn unless he's there for a season and we ain't got a season to give him.
And Bruce just really wants it to work, but he needs to understand that it's not going to work. Now, he's the manager. I understand that. He knows his players better than I do. But, you know, defensive midfielder to centre-back conversions rarely ever work. Rarely. And you can't just look at the guy and think, oh, he's big, he's good in the air, he can tackle along the ground, he's a good central defender. That's not how it works. That's not the sign of a good centre-back. Like, it's attributes that a good centre-back needs to have, absolutely. But also what's important, you know, if you are playing in that position, is to know how to read the game and to know how to handle it when a striker is trying to run past you, to know what to do when the ball is coming to the box off a quick cross. And that is not something that a defensive midfielder is always coached in. And I think it's just a bit arrogant, to be honest, of Steve Bruce to assume that he can play square pegs in round holes and it will work. We played perfectly fine against Hull City. Yes, we conceded that one dodgy goal, right? That was due to a centre-back not putting enough effort in, really, to get a ball from a corner, from a cross. Okay, fair enough. Other than that, Neil Taylor, yes, he was poor, but he wasn't awful. And in general, I just think that we messed around with a defence that wasn't that bad. We just messed around with it too much.
Yeah, I think he's entitled to his ideas. I just think you've got to... You know, it's either Mile Jedinak's going to be there all season or he's gone. You know, you stick or twist. I don't know what he's going to do.
Honestly, I'd rather have him than Whelan.
A centre-back?
No. In midfield.
Yeah, I think, yeah, go for that. But I don't know. It's a tricky one. It really is a tricky one. We're two games into the season. Villa haven't played desperately well. And that was, you know, they've played all right. They got the wins. But they went behind again. So they compounded their misery at Wigan by going behind 2-1 to an open header. Callum Connolly had an open header at the far post from across. It was just too easy. And I think these centre backs, man, I love Jones Chester to bits, but one of them's got to, you know, step up and make sure those people don't have open headers in the box.
Yeah, definitely.
Or if it's a keeper, command the box. If it's Chester, be the captain. If it's Jedinak, step up. You've got to one of them's got to pull them out. And I think there's just a bit of mixed messages going on there. Maybe it's something that will work itself out in the next few games. Maybe it isn't. We'll see. I think Jedinak's stuck there for a bit, mate, to be honest.
Yeah, it's starting to look like that, isn't it?
Yeah, but luckily, Villa did win the match. And it was through Conor Hourihan, who had two moments in the game. The first thing he does is come on. He'd been subbed on in the 94th minute. He comes on and he hoofs the ball as a clearance. The second thing he does is receive it on the edge of the box, dink it onto the far post where Berkka Bjarnason, for God knows why reason, you know, who knows why. He's a defensive midfielder. He's come on the flank and he's poked the ball home. 3-2, last kick of the game. It's done. Madness.
Yeah.
Do you think it's undeserved at all?
No. You know, we lost due to a defensive error. We conceded due to a defensive error. In fairness, so did Wigan. But, I mean, that one was just... That one was like, yeah, we put the ball into the box. So, you know, anything was going to happen. It was incredibly crowded. When a team sticks that many defenders in there, you're always going to suffer from scrambles. But in terms of us, like, that we basically handed them that goal. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, I forgot about the second one. Villa's second one, of course, a John McGinn corner just comes in. He whips a corner in. Bit of confusion in the box, bounces around in off someone's forehead.
The ghost.
And it's a... equalizer.
The ghost of Emerson Boyce came back. And Titus Bramble. Titus Bramble was haunting the stadium at that point, wasn't he? That's what was happening.
Nice fella, dude. Yeah, there's more we could speak about dodgy refs, but mate, I just want to keep it positive and think about 3 points. I hope Villa can kind of find their way a bit more, play a bit better. Maybe don't leave it so drastically. But I'll take it. I'll take the 6 points. I just hope there's an eye on improving performances. I hope that there's lessons to be learned here.
I hope that Bruce takes the initiative after watching that match. But yeah, like the thing is, one thing that I've always wondered is, do managers look at actual games, look at actual matches and make their decisions based on that? Or do they base their decisions on training and what they've been working on? That's one thing I'm wondering. Because is Bruce seeing something that we're not? Is there some reason that he believes that that defense that he put out there was better than the one he put out the week before? And Bruce, to be honest with me, Bruce, to be honest with me, doesn't strike me as an incredibly reactionary manager. I think what he's going to see is he's going to look at that performance, think, okay, McGinn's got to be our key guy. I think he's going to look at Bjarnason and wonder whether or not he is the guy to be playing as the linchpin in midfield ahead of Mila Jedinak. Of course, he was missing for a lot of the game. And I think he's going to look at Yeovil to experiment again. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see a few new faces jumping out against Yeovil. Maybe the likes of Richie Delac coming back into play.
Yeah, let's move on to Yeovil then. We've got two matches to preview. One is the Carabao Cup match, the first round Carabao Cup match against the Yeovil turn away at Yeovil. That's on Tuesday. I think we'll see a lot of changes, but I do think certain things will stay the same. I think we'll probably see Jedinak at centre-back.
Okay, yeah.
I think we'll also probably see, if not Jedinak at centre-back, Asa Suleiman in the squad. So either on subs bench or the first 11. I don't know if we'll go with Moreira in goal. I think he'll want Nyland in goal just to get a bit more settled.
Yeah. Understandable.
It's not like a Jed Steer situation where you feel like obligated to give your second guy minutes. He's not going to give Moreira minutes. And if he does, then it might be,
That's going to piss his team off, isn't it?
Yeah. But I think you'll see Neil Taylor come back in. I think Delac will come in. I think we'll keep with McGinn.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
I think Jack Grealish will be dropped. And I think we'll see Doyle Hayes, McGinn, and Hourihan there or thereabouts. One of them will be on the bench. In terms of striking, I don't think we'll see Hepburn Murphy start. I think he'll stick with Codger. Because Jonathan Codger hasn't looked great in these last two games. However, due to my rudimentary expected goals calculations, I can tell you that through two games, Jonathan Codger has one expected goal. So it's coming. There's a goal coming eventually. And he needs, God knows he needs a goal, mate.
But like, I'd say you keep him on the bench. Keep him on the bench. Maybe let him come on and smash in a penalty if that comes about, you know? It's something like that. I think yeah. You know, really the guy is, I think he has a confidence problem. He has a case of the Scott Hogans. You know, once one goal
he's in, trying too hard.
Yeah, totally.
And what the worst thing about trying too hard is, from experience, trying too hard always looks on the outside like you're not trying at all.
Yeah.
Because you try too hard, you get quite a position, you can't do anything. You stand still and you put your hands up in the air. You get frustrated. And it looks like you haven't done a thing. But I tell you what, when you're trying too hard, it always looks like that.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, if you weren't trying at all, he wouldn't be getting on the end of headers and he wouldn't have, you know, pulled off any shots. And he is. He's doing something, but it's just out of time and out of sync with everything. Thinking he needs to gel, thinking he needs to find his time, I think he needs to find a goal.
I have quickly. No doubt that he's trying. You know, I have absolutely no doubt that the guy's trying. I just think that he gets greedy sometimes. I think he tries too hard to get a goal. I think if he focused a little bit more on finding his teammates and on contributing to general play, I think that would help him out a lot more. But I think at the moment he seems to have a fluff at every opportunity he gets. You know, maybe tries to dribble through too many defenders or takes too long to find that perfect angle, which inevitably ends up getting blocked. And it is definitely a confidence thing. It's the same thing that happened to Scott Hogan until he scored and then went on that massive scoring run last season. I think that's it. I think the other thing we got to remember is that Scott Hogan exists. You know, we haven't seen him just yet. I think he's had an injury. But like personally, against Yeovil, I know Rashaan Hepburn-Murphy's had a couple of runouts already. And he has looked pretty good. I'd want to see Keenan Davis come out, man. I think he hasn't had any game time so far this season, but he was.
He's same injury as Hogan. It's that groin hip injury. Like he's carrying an injury.
Even for Yeovil.
Yeah, I don't know if because Hepburn Murphy was, you know, Villa said Hepburn Murphy was injured a day before he came on against Hull. So I'm not going to take too much faith in Davis being out completely. I'd say Hogan's not. There's no way Hogan's in. There's no way. But Davis, I mean, surprise, he could come in.
Yeah, as long the worst case scenario for me is I see that starting lineup and Albert Adoma is the sole striker. That's the worst case scenario for me because it just I love Albert, but it's one of those things where Bruce has done it before last season. You know, there was times where he probably should have given Rashaan a run out and he didn't. I totally understand why that is. I totally understand the reasons behind it. And also, just from what I've seen so far, he seems to be trying to create the perception of squad depth, which is strange because I think we do have squad depth, but I think he seems to be trying to play the more well-known or the more experienced players whenever he can and wherever he can. And I just would like to see more of a policy of giving the youngsters a, you know, more trust. I think especially against Yeovil, we need to be able to let Rashaan out or Jake Doyle Hayes, a lot of them.
Yeah, there's room for rotation, and the reason I say stick with Kadri is, you know, give him at least a chance he needs to find his way because it's still early doors. He's making things happen. It's just not coming off. He's behind the play, he's ahead of the play. It looks like he's not trying. I can assure you, he must be trying to, you know, to get close to what he's doing. No, it's just not coming off. He's had close headers against Wigan. I'm giving a chance against Yeovil. Give Pepper Murphy a chance to build more fitness minutes, and we should be good to go in terms of a striker when Keenan Davis and Hogan come back. I don't think we need to look for another one.
No, definitely not.
I think we've got enough going for us. But I want your prediction, mate, for the Yeovil Town match before we move on to the league action against Ipswich.
I think we'll win, but it's pretty much a written rule by now that Villa get dispatched in the first game of the League Cup to a team that's that's worse than them. It's happened every season for a while now, I think. Anyway, and I'm gonna actually have a look at Villa League Cup runs.
They haven't gone of that far in a while, mate.
Yeah, no, they haven't.
I don't think... We went to the final, didn't we, within the last 10 years against Manchester United. We've been to the semi-final once or twice since then.
I was on the Sherwood, wasn't
it? I think Bradford, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, we got Bradford. Was it over two legs?
When they got to the final. Yeah, over two, when they got to the final. So, I think it'll be 3-0 to Aston Villa. Right?
Okay, so Yeovil Town, they got a 2-2 draw against Mansfield over the weekend. Mansfield Town came back from behind twice. I think Yeovil Town, if I'm reading correctly, just didn't have much, pizzazz about them. But here's an interesting one, right? Here's an interesting fact for you, James, right? Or I'm going to assume this is a fact. I believe that if Yeovil and Aston Villa both field Issa Suleiman and Otis Khan, it could be the first time ever in English football that we've seen two British Asian players playing against each other. I just want to put that one out there.
That could be incredibly true.
If it is true, I don't know if it's facts check. I don't know whether the fact is there or not. But anyway, I'm putting way too much into it. I'm trying to build some tension before giving my prediction. But let's be absolutely real here. This is a League Two side who aren't a very good League Two side at that. They're a team who have won only just 1 point in their first two games. It's going to be Villa 4, Yeovil 1.
Ooh, that's exciting, man. Ramped it up a bit. Put a bit more positivity in it. We've got a league game, though, before we record again. Ipswich Town away. We go to Portman Road. Big Mick isn't there anymore. They've went for Paul Hurst of Shrewsbury Town. Ipswich are a bit of a nightmare club. The situation behind the scenes, of course, isn't great. They aren't being heavily funded. They aren't probably getting the backing they need to succeed. And they haven't done a great job in the league so far of doing anything at all. And Paul Hurst, of course, a really promising manager, comes in from Shrewsbury Town. They went to the playoffs last season, fell at the final hurdle against Rotherham, of course, who got promoted. Ipswich drew 2-2 with newly promoted Blackburn.
Yeah.
So 2-2. And they had to wait for a last-minute goal as well to bring that back. Then, nightmare for Paul Hurst because he lost to Rotherham in a 90th-minute goal again. Very much seems like a Roberto Di Matteo situation where a promising manager comes in and the team bottle it in the last minute.
It's got an awful squad. Honestly, like I look at that squad and it's just dreadful. I mean, I don't want to have a go at all of these players, but you know, a lot of them just aren't at this level. You know, I think some of them are quite young, in all fairness to them. But you know, you've got Guion Edwards. Harrison and Freddie Sears is your front three. I mean, Freddie Sears, you know, with all due respect to him, you know, leading a front three for, you know, in 2018 in the championship. And then, you know, you've got the likes of 19-year-old Trevor Chaloba starting in midfield for him, who actually seems to be their best player. Another 19-year-old in that midfield as well, Flynn Downs. There's a lot of young players in this Ipswich team. They're just not quite there yet. And I think, to me, they just look very unprepared. I cannot see them, you know, doing well at all this season. I genuinely think that they're going to be fighting a mad relegation battle because you just don't lose to Rotherham. You just don't lose to them. Interestingly as well, they've got a Villa youth player playing in the defence too, a former Villa youth player.
Really?
I don't know if you remember the name.
Enlighten me.
So he's. This is, I mean, I don't know where he's actually on loan from. Interestingly enough, right, he's actually on loan, I believe, from Accrington Stanley. Right, get this. A centre-back is on loan from Accrington Stanley to Ipswich Town.
Is that Janouar Donassia?
That's right. Janouar Donassia.
Oh, my God. He's on loan?
Yep.
Are you sure? That's mad. He's on loan from Accrington Stanley? Yeah, that's crazy.
On loan from Accrington Stanley. It is, to be fair, with a view to become permanent.
Oh, yeah, he's got a work permit because he's from St. Lucia.
So that might be
it's not EU. Yeah.
But which doesn't make it that weird. But even still, man, Janouar Donassia. It's a weird...
It's mad. It's like these championship clubs pick up Villa's, like, players on bargain deals. He had it with Daniel Johnson left Villa for 50 grand, didn't he, to Preston?
Jordan Graham.
And Callum Robinson left. Yeah, Jordan Graham and Callum Robinson left on a free. Samir Carruthers left on a free. And they're kind of the mainstays of these lower championship sides.
So I guess don't knock them.
Don't knock them. I think Villa missing something there in the academy. Some money to be made. But yeah. Mate, Ipswich aren't paying much money at all. I think they backed down from a deal for a bloke from AFC Wimbledon because it was going to cost them over 750 grand. That's insane.
They're not a rich club.
But you have to go for them. You have to back your club, otherwise it's going to sink.
Well, they are going to sink. Unfortunately, I think they're going down to League One this season. They just don't have enough in their squad, genuinely. There's just nothing there which makes me think, right, he's going to score enough goals for them to stay up. I just do not see it whatsoever.
They should be playing good football. They've got a good manager, but it doesn't look like things are going so well at the start of the season. May yet improve and need a few nifty loan deals in, though. But I think Villa are going to hammer him, mate. My prediction, it's 5-1 to Aston Villa.
5-1?
5-1, yeah.
Okay.
I think it's going to be brutal. I really do.
You think we're going to hammer
them? When I said that we were going to hammer them last season, mate, we hammered them. And I think they're in a worse situation now under a new manager who desperately needs backing for his plans to work. He's a good manager, Paul Hurst is, but Ipswich are not good, and I feel sorry for him. But Villa, if Villa improve, get going, they should hammer him.
There's no reason why we don't play this game on the front foot. And because of that, at least I don't see Steve Bruce being that, you know, that silly anyway. So having said that, I think that, yeah, it's going to be a hammering. I'm going to go, but then I've already said we're going to hammer Yeovil. Surely we chill out a bit against Ipswich. I'm going to go with a respectable 2-0.
Oh, that's very nice of you.
Just because we might be tired from the Yeovil game.
Okay. No, that's very respectable.
Yeah.
Very nice.
After what? You mean after I've just, like, shredded.
All right. Oh, I can't shit on them too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've come to the end of the league action, mate, the preview action. We do have a new feature.
Oh, great.
It's the power rankings. It's tied into the site. You've got no involvement in this. Well, not yet. I think you will do with the weeks to come, mate. But I've put it out there to the team, to Twitter. I want your 5 Villa players for the last week. So that includes the whole game, the transfer window, and Wigan Athletic. So it's not just about individual performances as well. It's about who you're feeling good about. So maybe if it was last season, you'd have felt good about Birkir Bjarnason, even though he wasn't in the team, because you're thinking maybe, hey, this guy can push in at DM. Oh my God, he's one of my top 5 players of relevance for this week. Even so, last week, you might be putting Jack Grealish as your most, you know, your top Villa player for staying at Villa. You know, it's not just about how good they are on the pitch. It's how they're coming forward, what they're doing, stuff like that. But yeah, mostly we've had a big surge of votes. I'll get to the rankings. A bit of suspense here, mate. So we've got the first power rankings of the season. Top 5 Villa players as voted by everyone who got involved. Okay. We'll start with number 5, mate. It's a tie.
Oh, okay.
It's a tie. Okay. So your top 5 Villa players in position 5, it is Conor Hourihan and Ahmed Al-Mohammadi.
Okay, I see that. You know, both equally respectable during the week. Obviously, Ahmed Al-Mohammadi scoring that goal, which was big for him. And Hourihan with that assist, that winning assist.
Late on, yeah.
Yeah.
Before I get on to position 4, a few people who missed out. Andre Green had a few votes. Birkir Bjarnason played pretty poorly for most of the game. Coming late with a goal makes him, big praise for him. For that, getting that, so a lot of people respecting that. Tommy Alphick as well, a few 5th place votes. But position 4, mate, you got to know who this is.
Is it John McGinn?
No, it's Alan Hutton, man.
Oh, right, okay.
Alan Hutton, no one rated him to be the worst. No one rated him to be the best. Bang in the middle of the pack. Top 5 is number 4.
Ah, okay.
Number 3, it's James Chester.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. Stayed at the club. Big respect to him. Made that little video. Yeah,
captain to 2 comeback victories. Yeah. Captain the team to 2 comeback victories. Solid in defence. Always, sometimes a few shaky moments, but man, I do love a bit of James Chester.
I was worried we were going to miss out on a lot of leadership without John Terry, but we haven't done, have we? We haven't done. James Chester's been a big man here, hasn't he? And he's he's not just inspired the team to come, to obviously win two games, but he's inspired the team to two comebacks. You know, let's not forget that. You know, it's two comebacks. It's being 1-0 down against Hull City. You know, a team who are going to be absolutely riding high, scoring the first goal of the season. You know, it's very, very hard to stop a team like that, like a freight train, aren't they, really? You know, when you've got that kind of momentum and you've got no sort of baggage holding you back. And then Wigan Athletic as well, who came back against us. We could have deflated, but obviously the captain, James Chester, just didn't allow it to happen. So, yeah, you got to give him reports for it.
Number two. Who do you think number two is going to be?
So basically, I think the top two is between Grealish and McGinn. What's that?
Bang on, that is.
I thought so, but like I can't split the two, because the thing is, Grealish would get a lot of plaudits for staying. I think he hasn't been spectacular in either game. He's been good, and because of that, I think Grealish will be second.
You're wrong. It's John McGinn who's really? Second.
Okay.
John McGinn, okay. Debut comes in straight at number two. Straight at number two.
It's still respectable, isn't it?
Yeah, and Grealish goes to number one with the most votes for the first place. James Chester actually had the second most votes for first place.
Okay,
but
okay, interesting.
Because John McGinn had so many for second place and third place and first place. He had a big mix going in. You know, I made a point system, you see. If you get the first position, that's 5 points. Second position is 4 points, and so on and so on. So, you know, position one's worth more. Position two's worth less. But yeah, I do digress, because Jack Grealish is top of the power rankings. John McGinn is second. James Chester is third. Alan Hutton is fourth. Ahmed Al-Mohammadi and Conor Hourihan slightly toy for fifth.
This is like a Ballon d'Or, isn't it?
It's the
Ballon d'Holt.
But do you agree? I do agree, though. I think Andre Green, close. Alfic, I get Alfic. I get why a few people voted for Alfic, to be honest, because... And maybe feeling, hey, this guy has a case for being a centre-back. Even with Twanzabe, if Twanzabe's going to be shifted out to the right, Alfic has to be shifted into the middle.
Sure.
But they made the case in week one, that is. So we'll keep a track of that overall to see who's top overall, and we'll do it week by week as well. So we're a fresh slate each week. It's a completely fresh slate each week. But overall, we'll be keeping a count of the highest scores. So we can, at the end of the season, we'll straight up have the information to say who's the player of the season, because you'd have all voted for him.
Yeah.
Throughout the season, fairly.
Saying, man, it's the Ballon d'Or. That is what.
Ballon d'Or, yeah.
That's what I'm going to call it as my unofficial nickname.
I think we'll give that to what we'll call at the end of the season. That's a trophy we'll award.
Can we send that one up to the big men in the back?
Yeah, we'll send it up. I think we'll award the trophy at the end of the season to whoever gets it. But those are the power rankings. Yeah. Feel free to join in next week. So next week two, of course, will be who's your top five out of Yeovil and Ipswich, and we'll carry on and see how it goes. But a fresh slate next week, and I think that's it from us this week, mate, on the whole cast.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, do we have any quick fire questions left, James? Or
I think we've kind of wrapped mostly everything up about centre back. And FFP, loan signings we've talked about, transfers, playing. Yeah, I think we've wrapped everything up, mate.
We've covered it all, to be fair.
Yeah. That's Danny Raza. You can find him at DH Raza on Twitter. You can find me at Gemma Rushton. You can find us all together at 7500 to Holt. And at 55 minutes, I think we'll wrap up week one of the Holtcast, week one of the season. And hope for more, Danny.
Yeah, let's hope for more. And let's hope that the energy stays positive. Let's hope that we can go the full season without a single negative Holtcast. Can't see that happening for whatever reason. But so far, Villa have been, I think, overawing us. And if this week is to go by, if the tension that we've had from this week is to go by, then it's going to be a very, very exciting season. And I think a few of us are going to be exhausted by the end of it.
We'll see you next week, folks, then. Goodbye.